Today's one is on the Changikwan, how it was formed and stuff, pretty much what's in the layer in the handout. It's interesting because I think, as well as me just talking about the Changikwan, there'll be lots of opportunities for you to ask questions. And at your level, you know, both of you getting ready for black, you know, in next to no time, then there'll be some things that you know, some that you don't know, and some that you've forgotten. So I think a lesson on Changikwan history is probably a good one for all of us to have. But the important thing is that you remember that you can ask questions at any time.
Before.
The more you ask, the more you know. The objectives of the lesson are to discuss the Changikwan, give you an understanding, hopefully a better understanding than what you already have by the end. I'll explain things as we go. Basically, it'll be broken down into me and you reading text on the screen. There are going to be two small activities within it, just tiny little things for you to a sort of growth point, if you like, for you to self-learn rather than just me teaching. And then by the end, hopefully you'll have picked up something new that you didn't have that you can carry forward. How is the Changikwan formed? So initially from 2005 to 2007. So let's dig in. Remember that you can stop and ask questions at any time. So what's in a name? In English, Changikwan means school of excellence. The name is a martial arts name, which is translated and formed slightly differently than that of an everyday sentence name. This is because in general, people choose, like it could be cook dough, which you could translate as the way of cook. What that would mean is some people, especially Oriental like founders, they would use their surname, and it's just the way of that person, the art of that person. So it's not quite like a normal name. It's a martial arts type of name. So our name is in two words. The first word is kwan, which is a Korean word, which means school or place where a martial art is studied. It's not the same as an academic school. So an academic classroom where you learn, that's not a kwan. A kwan is specifically for a martial arts place. The second word, Cheongyi, pronounced Cheongyi, was named after a 6 kilometer stream that flows west to east through downtown Seoul in South Korea. And that the word for stream is Cheon, and the name of the stream is Cheongyi, so it's Cheongyi Cheon. But that means Cheongyi stream. Now, the reason I chose Cheongyi after that stream is because where it flows from west to east in Seoul, every now and again it dries up and it's just gone. And then suddenly it comes back and it's a vibrant sort of stream that runs through the city. So because of the ups and downs that it has, and yet it always comes back to full flourish, the locals refer to it as the brilliant stream or the excellent stream. And I thought, not only because Usuhan is the Korean word for excellent, so Usuhan Kwon is a directly translated school of excellence. But we use Cheongyi because it surprises everyone. The stream surprises everyone because it, no matter what happens, it always comes back to being its best. So in other words, it strives for excellence, which is what we stand for. So the name just seemed ideal for us. So we ended up with Changikwan. I will pause as I go through these slides just in case you want to jump in, but feel free to interrupt me if I'm talking, if you need me to elaborate on something. So this is the logo. The logo, like with anything, like a car badge, you know, or, you know, anything that the logo of something that says this is what it is, that's what people see. So generally, it can be, you know, like in Honda or Hyundai, you know, they just have a H. But some logos are a bit more elaborate. So in the case of martial arts logos, as with ours, I put ours together things that mean something. So they have martial arts significance. So rather than it just being a badge with a kicker in, I made the colors and the constituents of the logo to have specific meanings. And what you can see on the screen now, as you've seen before, is just what the individual things mean. So when you put that badge together, you're not just wearing on your uniform something that says, oh, I do, you know, karate or whatever. It's, you know, there's a lot more behind the logo because it represents what you're doing for yourself through studying our system. So to find out a bit more about the system, just a brief history of me. I started my martial arts career in 1979 when I was nine. And I started in judo with the British Judo Association. So the logo's at the side of the arts that I did. And I did that for 3 years till I was 12. And then I left to join jiu-jitsu. I won't go into all of the transitions. This is just a sort of bullet point thing. But I moved from a throwing art into another throwing art that had strikes. So I just wanted to elaborate on what I already had. So I went from judo to jiu-jitsu. And then I did that for 4 years till I was 16. At that point, I left at first dan for the other one and second dan for the next one. And then I'd got tired at that point. It was GCSE time. And I'd got a bit tired of spending the last X amount of years being thrown on my back all the time. So I wanted a bit of a break from being thrown. And so if you look at judo as being all throwing and karate being all kicking and punching and jiu-jitsu being in the middle, that's the complete transition. So I went from just throwing to throwing with kicking and punching, which is jiu-jitsu, and then taking out the throwing altogether by going to karate, which was just the kicking and punching. And for me, there was no significant difference when I left karate for taekwondo, because they're both very similar arts. The only reason I left was because I wanted to add something more than what I was already getting. So it was, you know, nobody really has the time to do two arts. It's financially stressful and also eats up a lot of your time. You know, if you're doing two or three classes a week in one and you do two arts, then that's six nights. So it's quite a lot. So I wanted to move from a power-based art to focus more on being more relaxed and build some more speed instead of power. And so I transitioned then into Taekwondo in 1990. And then that's what I stayed in until that's probably what I would have stayed in. The transition into Taekwondo. And then I did that until 2003, when my Taekwondo instructor asked me if I would open a Taekwondo club. So I opened that club in 2003, our club. And it opened just as a Taekwondo class. And then I thought I was leaving the students open to attacks that they were vulnerable of, but I couldn't teach them anything different because I was confined to the rules of the art and I didn't feel I was giving my best as a teacher. So I thought maybe I should teach something that has everything in. And that's when it occurred to me to develop my own philosophy. So after opening in 2003, I carried on teaching just Taekwondo for the next 2 years. And then in 2005, I thought, right, I'm going to put something together. So between 2005 and 2007, that was the time when the Chong Yukon was being born. And I was developing a syllabus and a philosophy and a methodology so that I could work out how it was going to be, how we would grade, what bits we would have and what we wouldn't. So that all took place over the next 2 years. And then in 2007, it was officially made available to the public. And we officially left, the club officially left as teaching pure Taekwondo. I've continued to grade in each of those arts other than judo ever since, so that my development can continue, so that I can still have the resources to be able to put into our system, so that the students don't have to. They don't have to have the head sort of filled with all the different philosophies and rules and regulations. I do that on behalf of the art. And then all the financial side of that and all the baggage that I have to carry from the different arts, they just stay with me. And then the stripping of it down to what is essential for Chong Yukon is then just put into the philosophy that you study. So basically what I've just said, in 2003, age 33, I was asked by my instructor to open a Taekwondo club, which I did. The school ran for 2 years until in 2005, I began to move away from the traditional and classical styles of martial art and began the foundations for the method that would become Chong Yukon, and the doors officially opened in 2007. So, evolution and change. What is the Chong Yukon? The Chong Yukon method of martial art is based on an amalgamation of a concept and technical skill. So from the concept part of it, students are taught to learn the concept of how the body moves, how it responds and how it reacts in different situations by developing naturally occurring mechanisms that they can then apply to situations that require it. A defensive technique used from a natural reactive posture will always be faster than a recall technique. So something that you react to is faster than something you have to think about and then employ. The technical routines are practiced to learn tactical skills. Within a range of scenarios, adding the concept and the technical skills together are the foundation for the method of Chong Yi Kwan. The Chong Yi Kwan was formed because I was frustrated during sparring and self-defense practice in what I refer to as unilateral arts, or you could call them classical arts. I felt restricted by the rules of the styles that I was doing, having to hold back techniques that would have been more appropriate during the lessons, but were disallowed due to the regulations. And I thought this was a completely opposite to the objectives of effective success in combat. So for example, in Taekwondo, you can't punch to the face. So if a Taekwondo kick came in to me and their face was open, which it would be because in Taekwondo, they don't have a guard for the face. They were just plainly open for hand techniques to the face, but you can't do that because the rules of that art say so. So therefore I was having to hold back techniques that would have been more effective and knock the person out, but I couldn't do them because Taekwondo says you can't punch to the face. So those kind of restrictions are what made me think one art isn't good enough on its own. We need to be able to take out these restrictions and do anything we can in response to an attack so that we can defend. When I was in a karate class, you couldn't do this. When I was in a Taekwondo class, you couldn't do this. But my partners were open for techniques that would have ended the fight, but you couldn't do them because you were bound by the rules of that art.
So how come you can't punch to the face, but you can kick to the face?
Taekwondo considers itself a skilled art. And the primary statement that they make when a student asks that is anyone can punch to the face. So if you're teaching a Taekwondo class and you get someone in off the street and say, punch him in the face, they can do that. But nine times out of 10, if you get somebody in off the street and say, kick him in the head and knock him out, most people can't do that because either they can't kick that high, but even if they can lift a leg that high, they can't kick effectively if they're not trained. So Taekwondo only wants to work on the skills that aren't instinctive. Taekwondo thinks anyone can punch to the face, so we'll spend our time just working on the kicks, which is a good philosophy to spend time developing a skill that could be neglected, but to completely rule it out.
I don't know, it might be a stupid question. This is not just based on a sport principle then, rather than a self-defense principle.
Well, ITF Taekwondo is the Taekwondo that came first, and that is pretty much Korean Shotokan Karate. And in that version of Taekwondo, the first version, you can punch to the face, but it's only semi-contact. When Kokyuan Taekwondo came about, when the masters separated from that first version and formed Kokyuan Taekwondo, they took the punching out. And that's the version, the Kokyuan version is the sport version, the Olympic version. So that's the art that's mostly practiced in the world. It's the most practiced martial art in the world, Kokyuan Taekwondo. And it's the art that doesn't allow punching to the face. And the reason it's so popular is because it's an Olympic sport.
If you're in self-defense mode on a street level, it just doesn't make sense, does it? It's got to be classed as some kind of a sport action then, if you can't punch to the face.
And it's been like that since it was formed. I don't know why. When Choi Hung Hee, when he formed ITF, and it was in rebellion to the occupation by the Japanese, so they changed all the names and all the masters got together and came up with the word Taekwondo. So all the little sort of factions of martial arts got together, put it under an umbrella term of Taekwondo, and then they did that for a bit. And essentially it was Shotokan Karate, which the Japanese had been teaching during the occupation. But obviously the Koreans didn't want anything to do with the Japanese, and when they left, they carried on with the training, but they called it Taekwondo. And eventually some people just got fed up with it and said, we're going to take away, a bit like when there was Jiu-Jitsu and Jigoro Kano took Judo out of it. He didn't want the strikes, he just wanted the throw-in. So it was the same with Taekwondo. When Taekwondo was there and then the masters said, we don't want punching to the face, we don't like this semi-contact tip-tap rubbish. if you're fighting, you should be hitting hard to knock out. Different variations. So we took it out. So the one that we practiced, the cookie one version, is the full contact one, the knockout one. But for some reason, you know, you can't hit below the waist, so you can't kick to the legs, you can't sweep, and you can't punch to the face. So as with most martial arts, that's what I was finding. It had its strengths, but its weaknesses. So the idea was to come up with a good philosophy, a good system, where students didn't say, they weren't training in something and thinking, it's a good art, I like the club, I like the instructor, I make some good friends, but it's got some weak areas. I didn't want anyone to be able to say that. I want my students to go away thinking that they've done whatever they needed to do to make that art successful for them, because there are no limitations. That's what I try to have out there. The idea is to be, I think all martial arts have the same principles, and that's why they're all good. And if the instructor's good, the first thing he should be teaching is that we're not training to fight. We're not there to be able to be fighters. We're there to be better people and therefore develop ourselves that we can de-escalate and not have to fight. That's what we're trying to achieve. But if we have to fight, we want the skills that we can be successful. And I believed that any training you were doing that restricted your possibility of success was just obsolete. I was determined to make sure that people were aware that a new style had not been created, but simply that restrictions had been removed, which could now facilitate a more natural and individual form of expression for its students. Unlike purist or traditional martial artists that mostly just do what they're asked to do, Chung Yi Kwan practitioners are expected to question and research everything for their own development. So me teaching you now, and eventually as black belts, if you decide to open a club, you teaching your students, none of our students should ever be, I don't expect you, and you shouldn't expect your students to just follow you blindly. If they've got questions or concerns about the technique and the validity of it, whether it would work for them or not, then it's your job, as it is my job for you, to come up with ways to either show you that that technique can be effective if you apply it correctly, or to amend it to a way that it is more usable for your natural skill set, as opposed to me saying to you, this is how you do this punch. And if it doesn't feel natural, tough, just practice it 10,000 times and eventually it'll become natural. So practitioners utilize feelings of reactive defense and then subconsciously respond with the least amount of thought. Chung Yi Kwan is the name used for its practitioners to identify with the expression of their martial art and does not condition them to conform to standard set ways of doing things by using set doctrines and policies that will ultimately restrict them. It does not collect large quantities of rigid techniques that hinder and confuse them, but rather it eradicates the static and unnecessary bulk to leave crisp, sharp, unimpeded reaction. So rather than you learning a big load of syllabus just so you can pass each belt, the idea of that to us is alien in that you don't want to be collecting anything. You just want to be training on a constant one-to-one basis, having things thrown at you and seeing how your body reacts to that. Do you look away? You know, do you flight or do you fight? Do you run straight in? Are you hot-headed? Are you timid? Whatever your natural things are, it's a matter of tweaking them slightly, but then making what you are work for you by adding quick, sharp, fast techniques rather than going to a club where you practice basics for 10 years. And once you get your basics down right, then you can move on to a little more difficult and more complicated techniques. And the more complicated something is, the harder it is to recall at the time when you might need it. So the Chung Yi Kwan philosophy is to not have anything to recall, to just develop reactive techniques. The ability to use any technique effectively during a fight comes from the Chung Yi Kwan exposing its students to elements of defensive and offensive techniques that work for them. And that's the primary thing of Chung Yi Kwan, such as judo throwing or jujitsu locking or taekwondo kicking. So each of those arts have exceptional benefits, but they all have weaknesses. However, we don't have the weaknesses of those arts because I've took them out, or what I consider to be the weaknesses, but we've kept the benefits. So the benefits of throwing and grappling from judo, and the benefits of locking and joint breaking from jiu-jitsu, and then the accuracy and speed of kicking and punching from taekwondo and karate. So that's the stripping that's done. So the inessential classical mess has been removed, and just the skills that will enhance the student has been taken. Ultimately, the Chungi Kwan is simply a vehicle for its practitioners to learn to be in a state of perpetual growth. There's no magic formula or ingredient to it. All we do is we strip away. So like when a sculpture, you know, when he's met with his big block of marble, he doesn't add marble to it to make the sculpture. He strips away and he says the model's already inside. He's just stripping away the rubbish. So Chungi Kwan is similar to that. You know, we strip away the classical unnecessary mess that we don't need and just strip it down to effective technique, but not just effective technique, because a front kick might work for one person, but not for another. So we don't throw it in just because it works for me. I throw all the techniques at you that are beneficial, and then you will decide through practice which ones work for you, which don't, which you think might work for you but need some work, or which your mind just can't get around. And those ones that your mind doesn't accept, you will start your own stripping process then, and you will strip away what I give to you and just keep the essentials of what you need. And then when you start to teach, you'll teach your students what you think are effective techniques, what come from you and your experience and background from training, and then they will do the same. They will ignore the bits that you give them that they don't feel works for them, and they will bring it down to the point of the skills that are more beneficial to them, eradicating everything else. And that's essentially what we are. Because we came from Taekwondo, because the club, we didn't come from Taekwondo, you know, but because the club was a Taekwondo club when the Chungi Kwan process was initiated, we kept, although we changed our uniform, historically, we kept the belt structure. So students progress by using coloured belts. The order of the belt colours has been adopted from the Kukyuan belt system. So the ranks that you take as students mirror the grades that Kukyuan Taekwondo students take. So, for example, a red belt in Chungi Kwan has been training for the same amount of time as a red belt in my instructor's club, Master Davis's club, because it's the same grade, the same rank, if you like. The simplest way to define the Chungi Kwan is to say that it helps students to go beyond technical skills by helping them to use their own particular mental and physical attributes. Unlike classical or traditional martial arts, such as karate, applying a dictionary-style definition is difficult about the Chungi Kwan, and that's a good thing because combat itself is difficult to anticipate or predict. And just like the unpredictable nature of conflict and confrontation, a definition is impractical and restricting. So what that means is if someone says to you, what do you do? And you say karate, and they say, oh, what's karate? Well, we do katas and we do kicking and punching and we go to competitions, and you start to list things like that's all it is. Karate is just this. That's what you would describe to them. So you're restricting and confining your art into a definition of criteria of things that you do. And that's restrictive. Not only does that make the student think in his mind that that's what he's doing, therefore limiting his development because he thinks it's only on a certain spectrum. But because we don't have that in the Chungi Kwan, there's no dictionary definition of what the Chungi Kwan is. It's an expression. And if I asked, you know, if I got Sky Sports in to interview Pete and to interview James, and they said, what is Chungi Kwan? Once you get past the basic questions that they ask, what is the art? The definition that you give should appear different, because how you've applied it to fixing things within yourself, both physically and character-wise, and what you've needed to fix physically or what you needed to fix from your character will be different from student to student, and therefore how they've used the art to make those changes in themselves should give a different way of explaining what it is. So that's why we can't give a classical dictionary definition, because we can't pigeonhole it like that. It's too varied. It's too big for that. What type of students study this system? Most people who study classical styles of martial art do not want to reassess the dogma of their style, because it forces them to accept that there are weak areas that should be corrected. And so they continue in ignorance and sometimes rebellious arrogance to follow ancient doctrines because it is their traditional mandate. So if you have a student who's a second or third dan, so they've trained for, you know, maybe 8 years or so, and they know that katas, you know, the choreographed moves, don't really work outside, and they've noticed other flaws, like, you know, if it was taekwondo, they can't kick to the legs or they can't punch to the face. So that they know there's flaws, but they've done it for so long now, and they've paid so much money to get to the grade where they are, and they've invested so much time, that they're reluctant to leave. They're just happy to stay with it. I'm a black belt now, I'm a third dan now, and so I'll just carry on with this. It's good enough for me. And then if they're challenged on that, you know, if somebody says, well, you know, why don't you go and do Chongyi Kwan or Krav Maga or Jeet Kune Do or something more flowing that doesn't restrict you the way your art does, they become an arrogance, I think almost a defense. And from what I've seen in my conversations, not a defense of the art, a defense of why they need to stay, because they know that there are flaws, but they're not prepared to do anything about it. They're happy to just stay and do it. And I'm not talking about, say, somebody who's later in life and just wants to do an art for a hobby. They don't really care about fighting and self-defense. They want to, you know, keep fit and make friends and do something social. Any art will work for that. We're talking about people who do it for fighting reasons, whether it's self-defense reasons or for their job. You know, if they need to learn to fight for the job, maybe law enforcement or, you know, private security or anything like that. To stick in one art that has limitations just doesn't make sense. But if they've trained long enough to be relatively good at it, then they don't really want to be told by other people, you know, why don't you go and do this, because they're too invested. So the Chongyi Kwan's not like that. We don't have that classical mess. We don't make our students abide by any ancient rules and dogma and doctrine. And, you know, we do it this way because it was done this way 3,000 years ago. Well, that doesn't make sense. Just because this block and this kick was done like that 2,000 years ago. You know, if I'm attacked outside, I want the most modern scientific variation of this block. You know, I don't want virus protection from Windows 98. You know, I want the latest one for Windows 10 because the other one's not effective anymore. So in that vein then, in that thread, choreographed drills, some martial arts schools try to add self-defense practice within their style, but then they resume back to the practice of choreographed forms and pre-rehearsed systematic drills. This is not only confusing to the struggling practitioner during the class, but more importantly, it'll create nothing more than panic and confusion during the time of combat when they realize pre-designed drills are not effective, as it takes time to have to think. It takes too long to think about techniques. If you are being attacked by someone and the punch has already left, you know, the train's left the station, and you have to react to that, but you know, react with, you have to think about what to react with first. So you don't have time for that. So that's why in the Chongyi Kwan, nothing we do is choreographed and nothing is rehearsed. Nothing is pre-designed. Everything is fresh. I might have a lesson plan or an idea of what I want to teach that night. So if I was looking at having students develop blocking techniques for headshots or grappling on the ground, trying to get out of someone trying to put you in an arm lock when you're on the ground, I might have an idea of what I want the students to work on that night, but it isn't a predetermined thing. So, you know, it's difficult to articulate that, because when I'm demonstrating a scenario, if James throws a punch and I block and I do a technique and then you go and practice it, the difference between that and say, a jiu-jitsu technique or a karate technique, the technique that I demonstrate in that scenario isn't written down. It's not pre-designed. It's not, this is the arm lock you're going to practice tonight, because it's part of your syllabus, and so you need to perfect that and get it right. That's jiu-jitsu or karate or something else that uses arm locks. I might do a defense against James and then do an arm lock, and then the student goes and practices that, but it's not written down. That lock, that specific lock, isn't a requirement for your grading. There might be an element of a test that says demonstrate some arm locks or demonstrate some angles. But it's up to you to react with them. So what I look for in an assessment, in a grading, is I will say to you, punch this person in the head several times. And the defending person, I want you, for a couple of seconds, try to defend with locks or try to defend with a particular kick. So I'm not saying only use side kicks for this or only use a straight arm lock for that. By doing that, I'm saying to you, you're going to have to think a little bit, because if I say to you, only defend with arm locks, I'm not telling you which arm lock to do. I'm not going to tick off if you do a particular arm lock. What I want to see is if you can, the gap between a punch coming in and you defending with an arm lock, first of all, you have to stop and think, wait a minute, I'm not blocking and countering, I'm using a lock. You don't have time to add on top of that, which lock shall I use? You just have to react with a lock. The first part is a stumble and block. By me saying to you, I want you to do a defense with a lock, you're going to have to stop and think, wait a minute, I'm locking, I'm not striking. That's a stumble and block. So you have even less time to think of a lock. You just have to be locking up and then carrying on with your defense. As opposed to, this is a straight arm lock, this is a back arm lock, this is a figure four lock. They're the three locks I want you to do in this test. Go over there with your partner and perfect those three locks. That's choreographed training. Do you see the difference between the two? So we're not practicing set choreographed techniques. We're practicing every technique. And then in an assessment, in a test, I'm saying to you, show me some locks. You don't have time to think about them. You've just got to react with a lock. Therefore, developing your reactive skills, not your recall skills. Chonggi Kwan is not a set organization that members can join to learn choreographed routines. There are no magical elements to our method. It's simply, and this is the truest part, it is simply a non-traditional, non-conforming, and non-classical training system with simple, direct reaction, nothing unnecessary or synthetic. The techniques aren't classical, but we're tweaking them to be non-faffable. A side kick might have been used in the samurai days hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but that's only because you've got two arms and two legs and you can only throw them out in a certain way. And whether it was a martial art, Taekwondo was only developed in the 50s. So it's not the history of the art, how long it's been going. Because if a side kick had never been invented and I invented it today, it would look the same as a front kick that was thrown 2,000 years ago. I'm not saying a side kick and a front kick are the same, but I mean, there's only so many ways you can move your leg, you know, whether it's up or down or side. So it's not the length that it's been in use. It's finding out what, we've got two arms, we've got two legs, we've got a mouth. What can we do with them? It's not about if they punch high, I'll block high, but then hit low. And therefore I've developed, it's not about the historical, it's about using what you've got to be effective. And the best way to do that is to get rid of the classical mess or fluff, whatever it was that Pete called it. Get rid of that and just have usable technique. So why is there no sport aspect in Chonggi Kwan? There's a need, to be honest, in the promotion of sport within martial arts. And instructors need to make sure that their members realize that they're not practicing a traditional form of self-defense if it's a sports club, because it'll have rules and regulations and limitations, which is why it's not realistic or a practical martial art, because some students get confused. You know, they might go to a Taekwondo club because they think kicking's good and they've seen it in a film and think, if I go and learn that, I'll learn to defend myself. But if the Taekwondo club, like most Taekwondo clubs are, is a sport-orientated club, what they're going to be taught is sport technique, and sport technique doesn't transfer to the street. So instructors need to be clearer with the members of the clubs what type of club it is, rather than, oh, here's another £30 a month to pay for me holiday to the Bahamas. Or, you know, I understand that some instructors teach as a business, but at the same hand, they can't keep students because they need income and not be, you know, upfront with the student and say, this isn't a self-defense club, it's a sports club, because the student doesn't know the difference one way or the other. There needs to be more honesty in the promotion of sport. The aim of the Chonggi Kwan, unlike sport, is to remove all the non-natural and artificial responses from all forms of expression. And this is done by evaluating and assessing the formal or conformist and ritualistic practices of training, such as the classical stuff, and then eliminating them, only to leave a calm and focused point from which the Chonggi Kwan student can move forward in the practical application of a fight, as opposed to the choreographed practice of a fight in the form of sport. You know, a lot of people start their own arts these days. They might have, hopefully they've got a black belt in something, but they might have a black belt in jiu-jitsu and think, I want to be able to teach better kicks or something. So they make up their own system. But what you have there is a student who is, depending on their grade, let's say their second dan, that they're only junior black belts. First to third dan in black belts are only junior black belts. So they're not even senior in their own system. And then they're developing, they go out and teach a style that they add things to, but just things that they might have seen or they've practiced once or twice. And it's not a good way to do it, because it's not, there's no foundation, there's no development process. It's not a good way to do it. So the way I did it was, because I already held dan grades in four systems, it gave me the opportunity to draw on a black belt's experience in several arts. And just, you know, rather than just mixing things, I'd seen a bit of this on TV or my friend told me about this. But because I had at least dan grade experience in them, which isn't, you know, first and second dan is not high grades, but it's at least 3 to 4 years in an art. And that's long enough to say all the good things that you've seen so far, but there are also some weaknesses. So by 35, my age of 35, and having done all of those arts, at least I had a grounded pot of which to say, that's mess that can be done without. These are the bits that would be essentially useful for students. So it was sort of qualified selection. You know, I'd say if someone had a black belt in 3 or 4 arts and they made an art of those 3 arts, that they can, they're qualified by black belt to select what they think is good. I mean, anyone can start any art, call it anything and do what they want. But in order for them to feel that they're being honest to the students and say, I haven't just made this up by, you know, I watched a couple of Bruce Lee films and now I think I can kick. What you want is someone who has at least done a couple of arts and at least achieved a minimum of first dan, you know, so that they're qualified to say, this for me, this is a good bit and this is a bad bit. Now, if I was only going to teach me, then Chonggi Kwan would be good enough on its own for me to select what I think was good in the different systems. But because I'm teaching other people, I can't just teach you what I think is good about those systems for me. I have to teach you all of the techniques, still without the classical mess and you know, all of that, but as much of the technique as I can teach, so that you as the students can make your own decision on what works for you and what doesn't. There's no good me saying side kick and back kick are the best kicks. They're the most powerful and the ones you'll use the most in a defensive scenario. Because by now, with both of you approaching black belt by Christmas, you know, it's like, you might be like, you know, I've done 3 years now. I still don't feel back kicks any good. I don't like the way I've got to turn away from my opponent in order to kick him. Or when I hit him, I move something's off with my balance. I've just not been able to master that kick. So you might not think that that's a good kick. So you won't use that in a defensive fight. And when you come to teach your students, you might not even teach it because it's never worked for you. So I won't even bother. And that's not good. So when I say that, I consider my selective process to be qualified because I was at least black belt level. That qualifies me to make a selection for me so I can work on me with my selection. When it comes to teaching the class, the selection is a bit broader because I have to teach you everything I know so that you can make your own selective process. So I'm not teaching you Barry Cook Do. I'm teaching you Chung Yi Kwan, which is everything I know, and then you're making your own selections from there. Just be aware that when you come to teach your own students, that you need to teach them everything I've taught you, not just what you think works for you.